Understand it to the parampara. So Srila Prabhupada also gave us the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Rupa Goswami's disciple, Krishnadas Kaviraj, about his guru, Lord Chaitanya. So reading this chapter called The Lord's Dancing at Rath Yatra, right? This is in Puri, Jagannath Puri, 500 years ago, and every year was this Rath Yatra festival. And so Lord Chaitanya arranged kirtan parties with, I think it was four drummers in each part, no, four dancers. What was it? Six singers. Yeah. One leader and five responders, two drummers, kartal players, head dancer, and there were like two parties in front of the cart, and one on each side, and one in the back, I think. So seven or something like that. And he manifested himself in all the parties simultaneously. Yeah. So now it's describing Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastime for some time in this way. He personally sang and induced his personal associates to dance. Kabu eka morti kabu hanya bahu morti karya nurupa prabhu prakashaye shakti. According to his need, the Lord sometimes exhibited one form and sometimes many. This was being executed by his internal potency. Lila Veshi Prabhuranahi Nijanu Sandana Ichajane Lila Shakti Kare Samadana. Indeed, the personality of Godhead forgot himself in the course of his transcendental pastimes. But his internal potency, Lila Shakti, knowing the intentions of the Lord, made all arrangements. Prabhupada's purport. It is said in the Upanishads, Parasya Shakti Bhavidhai Vishruyate Swabhaviki Jana Jana Kabala Kriyacha. The Supreme Lord has multi-potencies which act so perfectly that all conscious strength and activity are being directed solely by His will. Svetashvatara Upanishad 6.8. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited His mystic power in presenting Himself simultaneously in each and every Sankirtan group. Most people thought that He was one, but some saw that He was many. The internal devotees could understand that the Lord, although one, was exhibiting Himself as many in the different Sankirtan groups. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, He forgot Himself and was simply absorbed in ecstatic bliss. However, His internal potency arranged everything perfectly. This is the difference between the internal and external potency. In the material world, the external potency, material energy, can act only after one endeavors at great length. But when the Supreme Lord desires, everything is performed automatically by the internal potency. By His will, things happen so nicely and perfectly that they appear to be carried out automatically. Sometimes the activities of the internal potency are exhibited in the material world. In fact, all the activities of the material nature are actually performed by the inconceivable energies of the Lord. The so-called scientists and students of material nature are unable to understand ultimately how things are happening. They evasively conclude that everything is being done by nature, but they do not know that behind nature is the potent, supreme personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam hetunan nanikonteya jagadipari vartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O Son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Purve yai che rasadi lila kaile vrindavane alaukika lila gora kaila kshanikshane. Just as Lord Krishna formerly performed the Ras Lila dance and other pastimes of Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed uncommon pastimes moment after moment. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing before the Rath Yatra car could be perceived only by pure devotees. Others cannot understand. The descriptions of Lord Krishna's uncommon dancing can be found in the revealed scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna expanded Himself into many, many forms while engaged in the Ras Lila dance. He also expanded Himself when He married 16,000 wives in Dwarka. The same process was adopted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when He expanded Himself into seven forms to dance in each and every group of the Sankirtan party. The expansions were appreciated by pure devotees, including King Prataparudra, Although for reasons of external formality, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to see King Prataparudra because he was a king. King Prataparudra became one of the Lord's most confidential devotees by the Lord's special mercy upon him. The king could see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simultaneously present in all seven groups. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, one cannot see the expansion to the transcendental forms of the Lord unless one is a pure devotee of the Lord. Emata Mahaprabhu Kari Nritya Rangi Bhashaila Sabaloka Premarata Rangi. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced in great jubilation and inundated all the people with waves of ecstatic love. As Lord Jagannath mounted his car, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inspired all his devotees to dance in front of him. Now, please hear about Lord Jagannath's going to the Gundicha temple while Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced before the car, Rath Yatra car. The Lord performed kirtan for some time, and through his own endeavor, he inspired all the devotees to dance. When the Lord himself wanted to dance, all seven groups combined together. The Lord's devotees, including Srimas, Ramai, Raghu, Govinda, Mukunda, Haridas, Govinda Nandana, Madhava Ghosh, and Govinda all combined together. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired to jump high while dancing, he placed these nine people in the charge of Swarup Damodar. These devotees, Swarup Damodar and the devotees in his charge, sang along with the Lord, and they also ran behind him. All the other groups of men also sang. Offering obeisance to the Lord with folded hands, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised his face to Lord Jagannath and prayed as follows. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanihitaya Cha Jagadataya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namah. Is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana, 1965. Let me offer my obeisances respectfully unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable deity of all Brahmanical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and brahmanas, and who is always benefiting the whole world. I have my repeated obeisance to this personality of Godhead, known as Krishna and Govinda. Jayati Jayati Devo Devaki Nandana Sao Jayati Jayati Krishna Vrishni Vangsa Pradipata Jayati Jayati Megha Shamala Komalango Jayati Jayati Prithvi Bara Nasho Mukunda. This is a verse from the Mukundamala Stotra, number 3. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as the Son of Devaki. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as the Light of the Vrishni Dynasty. All glory to the Supreme Personality of God, whose bodily luster is like that of a new cloud, and whose body is as soft as a lotus flower. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared on this planet to deliver the world from the burden of demons, who can offer liberation to everyone. Jayati janani vaso devaki janma vado yadovari parishat svair dorbir asin adarman stirachara vrijini gna shushmita sumukena vrajapura vanitanam vardayam kamadaivan. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.90.48. Lord Sri Krishna is he who is known as janani vas, the ultimate resort of all living entities. And it was also known as Devaki Nandana, or Yashoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. By his presence he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful, smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. Naham vipra na cha narapatir na pivaisho na shudro Naham varni na cha grihapatir no banasto yatirva Kintu pro dhyan nikala prananda purhamritabder Gopi puradu parakamalayor dasa dasa dasaha. Pajavali 74. I am not a brahmana. I am not a kshatriya. I am not a vaisho or a shudra. Nor am I a brahmachari, a householder, a vanaprastha, or a sannyasi. I identify myself only as a servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. He is like an ocean of nectar, and he is a cause of universal bliss. He is always existing with brilliance. Etapadi purnarapi Karila Pranam, Yodahati Bhakti Gani Vande Bhagavan. Having recited all these verses from the scriptures, the Lord again offered his obeisances, and all the devotees with folded hands also offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Udanda Nritya Prabhu Kariya Hunkar Chakra Brahmi Brahme Yache Avata Akar. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced and jumped high, roaring like thunder and moving in a circle like a wheel, he appeared like a circling firebrand. Purport, if a burning cinder or firebrand is whirled about very swiftly, it gives the appearance of a circle of fire. This is called Alata Akara, or a firebrand circle. The whole circle is not actually made of fire, but a single fire in motion. Similarly, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a single personality. When he danced and jumped high in a circle, he appeared like the Alata Chakra. Wherever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stepped while dancing, the whole earth with its hills and seas appeared to tilt. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, he displayed various blissful transcendental changes in his body. Sometimes he appeared as though stunned. Sometimes the hairs in his body stood on end. Sometimes he perspired, cried, trembled, and changed color. And sometimes he exhibited symptoms of helplessness, pride, exuberance, and humility. Achada khana pade bhume gadi jai suvarna parvata yaichi bhumate lotai. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down with a crash, boom, while dancing, he would roll on the ground. At such a time, it appeared that a golden mountain was rolling on the ground. Nityananda Prabhu would stretch out his two hands and try to catch the Lord when he was running here and there. Acharya would walk behind and chant loudly, Haribo, Haribo, again and again. Just to check the crowds from coming too near the Lord, they formed three circles. The first circle was guided by Nityananda, who was Balaram himself, the possessor of great strength. All the devotees headed by Kashishvara and Govinda linked hands and formed the second circle. Maharaj Prataparuda and his personal associates formed the third circle around the two inner circles, just to check the crowd from coming too near. With his hands on the shoulders of Hari Chandan, King Prataparuda could see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing, and the king felt great ecstasy. While the king beheld the dancing, Srivast Thakur, standing in front of him, became ecstatic as he saw the Lord dancing. Seeing Srivast Thakur standing before the king, Hari Chandan touched him with his hand and requested him to step aside. Absorbed in watching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing, Srivast Thakur could not understand why he was being touched and pushed. And he was pushed again and again, he became angry. Srivast Thakur slapped Hari Chandan to stop him from pushing him, and in turn, this made Hari Chandan angry. As the angered Hari Chandan was about to speak to Srivast Thakur, Maharaj Prataparuda personally stopped him. Bhagyavan tumi ihar hasta parsh paila amar bhagi nahi tumi kritarta haila. You are very fortunate. You have been graced with the touch of Srivast Thakur. I am not so fortunate. You should feel obliged to him. Everyone was astonished to see the dancing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and even Lord Jagannath became extremely happy to see him. The car came to a complete standstill and remained immobile while Lord Jagannath, with unblinking eyes, watched the dancing of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'm going to stop here then. Sri Chaitanya Nrita ki jai, Ranga Mahaprabhu ki jai. So reading a little bit every day and getting ready for Rath Yatra Festival. We'll see people dancing in ecstasy, jumping in the sky, like that. Running around, yes. All the people become amazed. The Hare Krishnas. We're mentioning that in the future this parade will be known as the Rath Yatra Parade. The 4th of July parade will change to be called the Rath Yatra Parade, because it'll become every year more people, more drummers, bigger cart, right? It'll become known as the Liberation Day Parade, right? Independence Day. Hare Krishna Liberation Day Rath Yatra Festival. Yeah, you doubt me, but it's happening all over the world. Yeah. So I also wanted to discuss, because in South America we have this program going on, and as I said when we first came here, you know, your house, we're using you all as guinea pigs, experimenting with our lecture program here. Of course, guinea pigs come from Peru, so it's quite appropriate. You know. So we mentioned that on, actually I can tell you, so on Friday, Friday evening is the main inauguration, and you know, like that, you know, for the whole festival. So on Friday evening will be the main inauguration festival, and it will be hosted by CONCETEC, Consejeros de Ciencia y Tecnología, like that. And it's the National Science Education Advisory Board, like that. And they set the curriculum from kindergarten to postdoctorate for science studies. And very powerful. They also decide on a lot of the money, you know, how it's going to go for educational facilities. And actually they're doing so well that the government's actually asked them to take charge of the Ministry of Culture as well, like that, you know. So we've had some contacts there, and we've been doing programs, and they're becoming more and more encouraged at what we're doing, partly because we can present it in a scientific way, you know, philosophy, culture, religion, you know. So there's a museum, National Museum. It's about a 15-story building with all kinds of fantastic architectural aspects to it. So behind that, the street behind that is CONCETEC's place. It's a one-story place. Looks like some kind of bungalows along the seafront, sandy area and things like that, you know. So they have a nice hall there. So host everything there. And we're trying more focusing on, it'll be pretty much by invitation only, like that. And so kind of program we're organizing now will probably start off with inauguration by Dr. Victor Carranza. And he's the assistant director, second person in the whole institution, like that. And he's very philosophically inclined. He studied the classical literatures of Greece and Rome and, you know, some of their classical culture in Peru. And so he's very talking to us a long time personally. He'll talk, and he's also a very kind of witty guy. He's sarcastic and, you know, joking about things like that, you know. And so he'll inaugurate the whole event like that and, you know, welcome everybody and discuss the purpose, because they're the sponsors. Then I think the idea is that I will give the keynote address like that, which we're going to try and work on tonight. Then after that, Nitai Gorsundar, your godbrother, right, will come on television like that, live teleconferencing, you know, from Nashville, Tennessee. And he's a psychiatrist. He's Ravi Prakash Singh, disciple of Satsrup Maharaj. And their family's from Lucknow. And he they help elect the mayor, et cetera, family, and educated. His father was a very famous poet, Bharati Award in poetry, like that, or devotional poetry. So I think he's going to talk a little bit more about, talk from Neos, because he's representing Neos. Talk about our perspectives and this particular theme about how classical Indian culture can serve as a guide for developing Peruvian culture, like that. How Peruvian culture can take a, take apoyo, take source, strength, from classical Indian culture. So maybe you can talk about how India is not doing this, you know, India is falling away from its own culture, like that. But it has this wonderful culture like that. Yeah. Think about his speech, give him some ideas. So after him then, probably then the rector of San Marcos University, which is our other sponsor there, will speak. And it's the oldest university in the Southern Hemisphere, 450 years, 50,000 students, internationally famous in different careers. So he's a very respectable dude. Yeah, like that. But also it's kind of tricky because Ricardo Palma was our original university we're working with, where Dora Bassan is. And the rector of that university is also rector of the Association of Rectors. So we're thinking of inviting him. And it's a whole thing of like, you know, the San Marcos rector is kind of like more powerful rector, but the rector of rectors is there, you know. So think about how we can invite everybody in the audience, because time isn't too short for these evening programs. You can't go too long in the evening like that. So if he speaks, then after that, yeah, we'll see, because then we're thinking maybe get a little more commentary by some people, but finishing off then with a vote of thanks and perspective by possibly by Miguel Polo, And he's the director of philosophy at San Marcos, like our university or like that. You know? So, oh yeah. Oh yeah, also, yeah, the director of Concitec also is going to be there too, so he can speak too. This host, he's a scientist like that. Huh? Oh yeah, Ambassador of India. In there too. Yeah, that's why. Okay, now we got it all, yeah. Me and Hegara Sundar, the director of Concitec, San Marcos, and the Ambassador of India like that. And then Miguel Polo kind of summarizing it all. Okay. Yeah. And so it's pretty good. I mean, it's developing. I'm talking about it because we have depth now. If the rector decides not to come, then we have the rector of rectors, you know, and a variety of very prominent people to speak like that. You know? And so this kind of thing is going to get people down to like a limited amount of time. And to do that, you have them submit their papers in writing before. So the vice chancellor of San Marcos said he'd like to participate, but he wanted to see like what was being written first, you know, at least a month or so in advance. So what I'm working on in my presentation and the keynote speech is that we're going to start off by, because the theme is how classical Indian culture can serve as a source of inspiration and guidance, perspective for developing a strategy for Peru. Because Peru is a boundary country. Our great friend, Professor Dimitri Kitsikas, University of Ottawa, highly decorated professor of the history of international relations, he comments that there is, you know, a global culture historically where things have developed along certain ways like that. For example, in our publication from the last event, he submitted a very brilliant article about this. And he says, when I got my PhD in 1962 from Paris, Sorbonne, and after 8 years, I started teaching as an associate and then full professor at the University of Ottawa in the Canadian capital. As a geopolitician, I built up my theory of the planets of civilization, was culminated in 1999 in my being received as a fellow in the prestigious Canadian Academy known as the Royal Society of Canada. I was regularly accused by my colleagues of being an astronomer rather than a historian. In fact, I reshaped the sky of civilizations. First, I dismissed the classical division of West and East, and I discovered a new planet, which I called the Intermediate Region. Let me explain my celestial map. Eurasia being the center. I found out that since time immemorial, it was divided between two planets of civilization, China in the East, the Intermediate Region in the West, dominated by Greek civilization. In the middle, above these two planets, at their junction, was standing an upper spiritual planet, India. From the heights of the Himalayan mountains and the depths of the Ganges Valley, Ganga Valley, gave the spirit into the bodies of both civilizations, the Greek in the West and the Chinese in the East. For thousands of years, the celestial triangle, where India at the top dominated the two planets, composed the Ecumene. Only in the 15th century AD, from the planet of the Intermediate Region, was attached a moon, attached as a moon from the Earth, what would be known as the West, which immediately, as the lowest of all planets, was ruled by the merchants. Will expand like a cancer, encompass the whole world, and attack and destroy the Intermediate Region in China. Okay. So he's presenting this historical point of view. India has always been the source of the greatest civilization, culture, and everything else. And now in the West, we've fallen away from this because of very contaminated processes like that. And so now, you know, certain countries, like Greece, for example, are in between. You know, the West has been newly created, and the East. He talks about the Renaissance. People thought, oh, this is a return to our classical culture. He said it had nothing to do with return to classical culture. It was a bunch of stupid Huns, Germans, you know, trying to figure out some kind of reasonable-looking ancestors rather than guys with horns and, you know, fangs. He said, well, our ancestors are the Greeks, like that, you know. And then they perverted the Greek philosophy into this, you know, materialistic, you know, humanistic, you know, evolutionary, you know, idea like that. But he said, no, the Greek culture has always been more oriental. It's theocentric, it's respecting tradition, it's mystical, like that, so on, and traditional. So So, you know, we haven't got time to go in detail, but the general idea is that here's a very respectable historian. He's a member of the Royal Academy. He's regularly listed in 7 different international who's, like that. And he's presenting this thesis, which, you know, we can appreciate that India has always been, if we don't agree it's the predominant source of culture, it's like definitely considered, we have to consider it as an excellent source for traditional culture, the highest quality like that, and so on. So even looking at it then from a modern academic point of view, there's value in taking this idea to stop and consider, you know, the value of Indian civilization, Indian culture like that. Although, of course, he, as he's saying, the Western idea, which has developed recently, is trying to destroy, you know, all these previous cultures and their value and their worth. Peru, especially a good place to consider this, in World Magazine now. Myself, when I first came here, and I was reading our director of our own institute, the Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, Ricardo Palma University, Dora Bassan Montenegro, she points out that geographically, Peru is an Occidental country, a Western country. It's there in the Western Hemisphere like that. But culturally, and in its heritage and its perspective, it's actually Oriental culture. You, for example, when you go to Argentina in the south, and every corner you find a pizzeria, and always Italian culture, European culture, and reading European books, studying psychoanalysis. But when you go to Peru, on every corner you find
Chinese,
a chifa, Chinese restaurant. So very much ability to appreciate these Oriental perspectives like that. So just like Dr. Kitsikas calls Greece country of the middle region, you know, boundary region, Peru also has this fortunate position for us, because the place where many different cultures can be considered like that. Traditional Inca culture with worship of demigods and subtle forces is still intact. The medical systems, all these things are still there. Then later the colonial system with this Spanish system with a sophisticated system of social relationships and culture is still there. Then after that the Marxist system came and they had a taste of that and it's still there. And now this modern consumer shopping industrialized, you know, mechanistic society of the United States and Northern Europe is coming. And so it all exists simultaneously. And so Peru is a place, very good place, you know, to consider all these things for the benefit of Peru and the benefit of the whole world. And to show how we can develop, you know, a very good culture like that. So Peru has a very possibility for a very, very great mission, right, in the world like that. So, considering this then, you know, starting from the modern world, we can look at this task, you know, of integration of these different cultures like that and how, what course Peru might take, you know, based upon his Indian classical wisdom. So there was a very, very nice World Congress in 1984, organized by our Bhaktivedanta Institute, like that, and many, many Nobel laureates, chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, and the president of the World Council of Churches also attended like that. He is Paulos Mar Gregorius, who is the Archbishop, Orthodox Archbishop of Delhi, and a very great scholar. So there he mentions that at the, the Diamond Jubilee celebration of the Indian Philosophical Congress, the then Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi put forward 2 interesting questions to the assembled philosophers. He says, as India moves into the 21st century, now we're saying these same questions are very, very good for Peru, informing its perspective, because it's very similar, very accessible to this culture. We cannot escape modern science and technology as the basic building blocks of our civilization. And there they're going to all nod, because they have these traditional cultures, Catholicism, Inca culture, and they realize that they just can't escape from if they want to. Right? This is Consitec. Was organizing this whole program, right? Some people say that building a purely technological civilization would take away India or Peru's soul and would amount to Coca-Cola-ization of the land. So his first question was, is there an intrinsic conflict between a technological society and the heritage of India? Secondly, he asked, if we build a technological civilization and also want to incorporate spiritual values in a multi-religious society, which values are most important? Like that. So I think these are very, 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 and we can see that the Indian culture generates the same deep thinking as the Peruvian culture also, about who we are, what is our situation. And if faced with a very, very identical situation, there's definitely a multi-religious society. With Catholic culture is now experiencing, you know, great growth in Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, Evangelical, Hare Krishnas, different Oriental, you know, faiths, religions, and views of life like that. So our own preceptor, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, you know, has been saying, and many other people may also make this comment, the science is the most, you know, prominent philosophical perspective in the modern world like that, you know. And so if Peru is going to try and, you know, make a future for itself with a practical strategy, something that actually work, then they have to include science in that. But his point is that, especially in a country like Peru, they're very deep and also very beautiful, you know, cultural aspects like that. And we wonder if this modernization, mechanization, industrialization is simply going to destroy these. At this point, they're all going to nod. They can see it. It's happening. They lament what's happening with this modernization like that on one hand. You know? And how can we actually integrate, you know, technology with very, very deep, rich cultural values, which we realize are important. We see maybe other cultures, even those who are highly civilized. It's even been criticized. Divyavani was quoting René Guénon, was saying that these industrialized societies have lost their soul. They've lost their soul, sacrificed. Other time, made this came common. There's this tendency with technologization of losing the soul. So is it possible to generate a culture which doesn't lose the soul, but takes advantage of these needed technological advances in a new way? And also, if we keep these those cultural aspects like that, even those we have to understand deeply how to integrate them like that. So this perspective, wow, it's all working out here. We've been making this humble offering from our own, you know, tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and also from NEOS, North American Institute, in cooperation with San Marcos like that, to try and offer these presentations, Bharatiya Sanskriti, and showing everything of this culture of India and how it might be appropriate for Peru in this great, great challenge, this great, great adventure like that. We have had ladies' fashion show called Gustatory Tour of India, drama, dance, music, and even doing this 1 week. So far we've been able to present very nice programs with Cantuta. Of course, we presented programs on educational philosophy, fundamental principles of education and perspectives that might be useful in this endeavor. And also we continued then showing specific examples of how music, art, dance, culture, for which of course Peru is such so famous, so enriched, can also enter into these at a very, very attractive, simple level, but also go to profound depths of psychology through Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and other literatures unknown in practically speaking in Western culture like that. Then we were so fortunate to go on, I'm talking about, Thursday, the presentations of the your national educational institution, national agricultural institution, La Agraria. And again, taking, you know, resources from these Bhagavad culture, we were discussing the agricultural perspective and general principles from these traditional cultures, as well as the necessity to integrate this knowledge with society. You know, there, we're making this point that if there's no proper development of social principles, you know, and then all that happens is the capitalists, instead of using, you know, resources, saving excess resources to use during times of shortage and transport places of shortage, it becomes greed. That over-collecting then leads to exploitation of the farmers. The farmers are themselves the basis, the fabric of society. You know, rural culture with agriculture and living close to the land and nature should become the heart of society, not big factories turning out smoke and iron tools. It's a necessity, but the Vedic culture is suggesting no, that human beings live most naturally when the focus, the predominance,
It's a science and a science and a technology was developed, these very natural ways of life. And Peru, of course, is rich in these kind of agricultural resources. They're not developing. And so finally we're here today discussing this perspective on how specifically this can develop in terms of a source of inspiration for Peru, like that. And then we'll continue with these ideas. San Marcos on Saturday, we'll have a workshop specifically on social philosophy. This is called Dandaveda in the Vedic tradition. So many aspects, science and technology, yantravidhi, machines, architecture, vastu, such a source of knowledge like that. But the Dandaveda, to our perspective, is the most important, because that's a social philosophy. And the Vedic perspective is that we're all living entities in social relationship, with the Supreme Spirit, with individually spirits of one another. In this world, that's how we manifest our abilities. So the more we understand social philosophy, we'll become able to integrate our lifestyle, work together, produce good children. And from these good children and educating them properly, they'll be able to appreciate all these subtler physical forces like that and generate amazing things. Even in defense, even in self-defense, if weapons are needed, and somebody has to go forward with all prestige and weapons to defend the nation. Yes, we're suggesting even that is here. But it may not be necessary if culture develops properly. Through that diplomacy and art, music, culture, people's hearts can be changed without war. And then hopefully then on Sunday, we'll have interfaith dialogue discussing these very, very intense topics of personal topics that touch people and motivate them of religion. With Buddhism, our Vaishnava traditions of India, classical perspectives, and also then Christianity, and how these all fit together from common grounds and common perspectives like that, whereby we can all become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause, even on the religious level. And then finally, in the Monday and Tuesday, we're hoping then on Monday to have a very, very nice summary of some of these other specific Vedic resources such as astrology, Ayurveda, the medical systems, and Vastu, the architectural systems. At first, these may appear to simply be some kind of romantic hallucinations, but as we go into the fundamental principles of science in Sankhya, which we've presented several times at Konsitech now, called the Sankhya system, which is attracting even Nobel laureates in the world like that, then we see that these are based upon very sound principles. They allow us to explain how the indigenous medical systems in Peru work, how subtle psychological forces are there in nature, different personalities like that. So Monday we hope to go into some presentation of these like that. And then what we're offering is very, very substantial program we have to offer now. And maybe this is the only time we're going to offer it, so don't miss out. The great wheel of destiny is turning, and now it's facing Peru. So step on board. Well, the chance may not have come again for many thousands of years. So what we're offering is a seminar on one of the most principal of all the Vedic literatures. Of course, every culture has its tradition in sculpture, art, music, dance, so many things like that, which is coming down to us, classical culture. But of course, literature, right? Classical literature is, possibly universally the most valuable gift any culture can offer like that, is classical literature. So Professor Gary Hart, the University of California, published a very nice book, introductory book to Sanskrit, a rapid Sanskrit method. The Sanskrit language is, of course, the key to all these things. Like Latin is the common language for European languages. Sanskrit is a language common to all these. And he says in here, he talks about Sanskrit and its history, and he's discovering why to study the language. And we're hoping possibly this next festival to begin a very serious program of study of Sanskrit language. Oh yeah, okay. I forgot to mention Monday. Photocopied by Sherrod. Oh yeah. Okay, there it is. The variety of writings in Sanskrit and the quantity of writings is staggering. An incomplete list of subjects treated in Sanskrit, usually with great prolixity, are as follows. Four Vedas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Upanishads, grammar, epics, including 18 major Puranas, 18 minor Puranas, and hundreds of Stala Puranas, classical literature, including hundreds of plays, epic poems, and classical forms, Buddhist Mahayana literatures, works on ethics, works on aesthetics, works on erotics, medicine, philosophy, theology, combining six main orthodox Hindu systems, six main heterodox systems, and scores of subsystems, logic, devotional hymns, dictionaries, astronomy, astrology, mathematics, law books, rituals, tantricism, architecture, history, panegyrics, inscriptions, music, sculpture, painting. On most of these subjects, there is an immense literature still extant. Indeed, a rough estimate of the works, which will be listed in the New Catalogus Catalogorium, the standard academic bibliography of literature, yields a total of about 160,000 works still extant in Sanskrit. Many so difficult that it would take years of study to properly understand them. And while it would be wrong to suppose that every work in Sanskrit is of great aesthetic or scientific value, the fact remains that Sanskrit does have its share of great writers. Kalidas ranks with the greatest poets. Panini is without question the greatest pre-modern grammarian. The Mahabharata ranks with the Iliad and Odyssey, and the Bhagavad Purana is among the finest works of devotion ever written, being equaled, in my opinion, only by other works in the Indian languages. Okay, biblical scholars may growl at this. So, what we're offering then out of this vast volume of literature, this vast classical research in all these areas, which we're suggesting all these can be developed, what we're offering then is specifically what would be considered very, in many ways, a very, very good introduction to the whole thing, which is a academic introduction to the Bhagavad Purana. It's complete in 18,000 verses, and not only is it devotionally excellent, but philosophically, poetically, aesthetically, and also in terms of science, and philosophy of nature. It is a fantastic work of literature. And so we're organizing now, with the help of San Marcos and Neos, is a 30-week seminar on this Bhagavad Purana. And tomorrow, Saturday morning, we'll start with a one-hour overview of the entire literature. We'll cover 18,000 verses in 68 minutes. So bring your seatbelt and your fire extinguisher. And then also the second hour, we'll go back over with a summary of the first two cantos, because the work is complete in 12 cantos. And these first two cantos are considered open to everybody, every good-hearted person. But the later cantos require a higher level of development, ethical, moral, and yogic abilities to appreciate them without danger to the student like that. So the seminar will cover these first two cantos. And then we're established by internet, distance education, with a web page and different groups with site facilitators. So of course we're inviting some of the distinguished audience members, this and that, to either themselves or take somebody from the institution to participate in this study like that. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. And also, I didn't mention on Monday, besides the diverse sanghas, we'll also have a very, very erudite discussion in more detail of the validity and history and breadth of these classical literatures. And there'll also be a very, very special videotaped interview by Professor Ravi Gupta of our NEOS Institutes, like that. Only recorded for this program, and so on. Thank you all very much. So, okay, thank you. I've been here listening to the recording now. I could type this all up now, right? I was thinking I would just type it up tomorrow. God, it's going to take longer than I thought. Then after that, the two conferences, one in Ricardo Palma? No. I think for Ricardo Palma, I'm not going to do too much. I've already agreed to that. That's her conference. She has to do it. But I was going to cancel all those marijuanas. And Kantuta, education. We've got to work on that a little bit. I think what I'll do there is I'll just present, paraphrase the presentation of the Light of the Bhagavat. And then Ananga Manjari, she's a school psychologist, educational psychologist. And last year she did a very nice presentation on the role of girls, women in Vedic culture, from the first two cantos like that. And she also integrated it with our Gurukula. It'll be very natural then. I can do Light of the Bhagavat. The Gurukula boys can do an invocation, the mantras like that. And then I can do Light of the Bhagavat. The thing is about how the Brahmanas shouldn't become Kshatriyas. They should inspire them. Very nice purport. And she can talk about the role of girls specifically. Maybe have that perspective too, how ladies also should participate as Brahmanas. Yeah, that's a good point for her. Yeah, what it means to be a Brahmin lady in this society. Yeah. And then finish off with our girls, you know. We've got the Gurukula is under all kinds of attack down there. One thing interesting that happened was that some of the parents wanted to take their kids out of it and put them in secular schools and say they're not getting a good material education here. They'll be poor like us. Want them to go to school, get good work jobs. And also they're becoming, you know, introverted. They won't be able to function in regular society because they don't, you know, go to regular schools. So some of the parents didn't want to do it. They wanted to send their kids to school. And the former president, Kanu Pandit, he's always supporting us, Gurukula. Because he said, my one son went to Gurukula until about the sixth grade, okay, something like that. Then he wanted to go to public school, okay, we sent him there. So he likes devotees, he chants some rounds, but he gets a little bit involved in marijuana sometimes, and he's developing his life, you know. And my daughter went through the whole thing like that, all the way. And he said, she's a devotee. And it's her life, and she just is a devotee. And she didn't get the technical education that he got. But he said, I see. Anything she needs to know, she just learns it. That's that. Tell me how to do this, how to do that, how to do this, that. And she has this sharp intelligence in that. And her life is to be a devotee. She always wants to be involved in devotional projects like that. So I see the difference between having a spiritual backup and living your life in the whole system like that for children. So then the children went to the outside schools. And they weren't morons. You know, they started scoring first place amongst all their classmates. They weren't socially adept. I drove by one school one time when the boy said, oh, that's so-and-so. You know, he was sitting in front of the school with about eight other kids. And he was obviously like leading some discussion. They were listening and stuff like that. No. Yeah. So that made these parents then who took their kids out, they wanted to destroy the Gurukula. You know, some parents wanted to maintain it. And so they said, no, you got, you know, that was called cognitive dissonance. You know? You have this thing like, you know, to prove that you're right, you have to destroy this, so, you know, like that. You know? So I told them what you should do. What's been a success in ISKCON has been homeschooling. Yeah. So you go ahead, and the parents that want to do this, you get together and make this a homeschool with your children and whoever else wants to come. And because they have credentials, all of them, they can keep it legal. They actually, almost all of them are qualified, or what's it called, our professional teachers like that. Ananda Maya, our director, is a soccer coach. His wife is a children's primary education, you know, PE teacher. Like that. So he did that, and, you know, sure enough, it was, and then when the kids started scoring well in school, it became even more, like, you know, irritating. You know, they had to, like, eliminate this because it becomes totally an affront to our intelligence and everything else. So the pressure got even heavier. But sure enough, when you're trying to, like, you know, attack mothers who are defending their children, their right to education, and it's like attacking she-bears and trying to take their cubs away. Like, no, yeah, it was like these women were, you know, don't mess with our Gurukula, you know? These are my kids, you know? And so, you know, it was... They couldn't do it. It was tough. I feel very proud of giving them the strategy. And they're surviving on $600 a month, what we give. I told them they've got to match that with 600 soles a month, which is about one-third, about 200. So $800 a month, they're running a school with about 15 kids. And some people, for example, one couple, they send their kids from Lima, which is about 45 minutes. There's one, you know, small, they're called combis. They're about 12 passengers. A small buses like that, you know, everywhere. So they contracted one guy. He's always going back and forth between Chosica and Lima. Okay, every day you start your time here, pick our kids up, and drop them off at the school. In the evening, you finish off your day by picking them up and bringing them back like that. You know, it's okay, in contrast. So these kids come all the way from Lima just to participate. So some families are there. And, oh, you're a sannyasi, you're copping out, you're not getting involved in politics and management, you won't organize a big meeting here in Boise to discuss all these things. You know? Well, no. How much can you do, right? You know, you can only do so much. So the Gurukula I'm working with, I sent you some letters about what's going on down there. And I got one letter. Oh, you know, different things are going on. This happened, that happened. So then I talked to the devotee in charge. He said, well, you did that because this, that, this, that. I sent his letter to another lady. She said, oh, I didn't know that. You know, so just arranging, talking, communication. And so the Gurukula is going on there. We already brought this topic up. Why did I bring it up? Homeschooling, education. Huh?
That one.
Oh, Cantuta.
That you were listening to the presentation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. We got it. Thank you. Okay. So, in one of these roundhouse meetings, people were criticizing, you know, and saying that, again, these kids, the academic level is not acceptable and this and that. So they're all professional teachers, and they all kind of, you know, this is parents criticizing them. They work right now in outside schools, and they all kind of look at each other, and they say, well, no, we work in professional schools, you know. And it's maybe a little bit below the average for technical education in terms of computer proficiency and science training and stuff like that. We admit that, maybe a little bit, but not much, or, you know, many of schools in this level like that. And they said, but then Ananda Maya, as a director, he said, but we've been really focusing on teaching the kids how it's fun to learn. Other schools, they motivate the kids to learn by twisting their ears. You know, you don't know your subject, you know, I'll learn. Really, you know, yeah. So, yeah, there are techniques, or you'll become poor, you know, you gotta make money and become happy and all these things, you know. Become a computer scientist, you can make money, then you can go to America and marry a beautiful girl and have a car and a big house and come back to your village and everybody will be envious of you. No. Bobby and Sally went to the like that, you know. Yeah, so they're trying to just deal with the kids. Their model is like, you know, teaching them to find in themselves why learning is good. When they find that in themselves, then they, of course, that's the biggest thing. If you learn to learn, you know, your whole life then it goes on, right? Learning to learn like that. And so then, and also then, that involves then the main thing, the main function of the Gurukula, Prabhupada said, is character development. Not technical knowledge. If you have good character like that, you know what life's goals are, you know how to control your senses and your mind, your time, right? Then it's easy to pick this stuff up, you know? So, and then Ananda Maya says, look at the children, like, look at her name, like Rajeshwari. I think she's like about 11 years old now. She says, A is an Adama. You know, Adama means lady. She's a lady, like that. Other people, including the women you're opposed to, are kind of all going, yes, you have very good children coming out with very cheerful, very happy, you know, and very good comportment like that, very respectable. You know, it's the word like modest, naturally, you know, like that. Self-respecting people like that. You know? Yeah. So that was kind of the end of the conversation, end of the attack, and they kind of point. So then Cantuta, that's the point of bringing these girls. And saying they have different mottos in the school. Looking for a motto for our school, like they have motto like training tomorrow's leaders today, or something like. What was the one? Yeah, what it was like that. But I was suggesting, why not? You know, was that one a point? Like, you know, learning how to learn, like that. Teaching love of learning. Didn't actually work it out. That's our point. That's what Bhaktivedanta means. It means love of wisdom. What does philosophy mean? Doctor, what does that mean? Doctor of philosophy.
Philosophy means love.
Sophie. Yeah. Wisdom, no? And doctor means? Teacher. God. Teacher of love of wisdom. It's the same as bhakti, Vedanta. Same idea. Not that you know something, but you love wisdom. Like that. So in Cantuta, then we have a very natural relationship developing more and more. And like in Peru, the daughter of the director of music and dance education, which is very big in Peru, you know, is her father's director, like that. So he's always, he's the person who's organizing the program like that. And he's good. He's going to, you know, do it in such a way that there's good income and things like that. You know, very expert in filling the audience hall. And of course, right across the road. So we're hoping then is that you know, we can do these things and they'll look at what we're doing and everything else and just give us a hand. You know, start coming over and make somebody, okay, you're doing your PhD in education. Why don't you go over and look at the Hare Krishnas? You like them anyway. I know you say, oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, okay, why don't you do a PhD program? Help them design something, work like that. You know, and why don't you guys get so-and-so grant money? Well, we didn't know about that. Well, look at you. I got a cousin who works in the ministry. Yeah. So once you just, you know, Treya Rishi, he's a Merak, the middle ground, like that. And he was a businessman. He graduated from Harvard Business School. He said, Prabhu, in 4 years at Harvard Business School, all I ever learned was buy cheap, sell high. All there is, basically, you know. And he was talking about these things. Really, these programs, like even here, right? We want to be big. We want to make it, you know, the 4th of July, you know, Rath Yatra Independence Festival, right? You think like this, you know. One Christian preacher, he wasn't making any disciples, so another Christian preacher is making so many disciples for Christ. And he said, well, what's the secret? I say the same things you do, and people surrender. And the successful preacher said, when you're preaching, do you think they're going to surrender? He said, well, no. That's your problem. Yeah. Are you thinking this is just a little temple, which later on will grow into different mini temples and finally a big temple? Or do you have some vision like that? No. Maybe not, you know. Yeah. So hearing, chanting, we get that. We keep that vision, practical vision in this world, what we're trying to do, like that. And then, you know, it gradually manifests itself. Prabhupada said, my only problem was I couldn't think small for Krishna, like that. You know? You think like that. Yeah. So, you know, down there, our connection, we maintain your little seed program, we do what you can do, keep it pure, like that, and then it's going to take off, probably not because of step by step by step, effort, you know, over hundreds and thousands of years. What's going to take off is when you have a sugar daddy, that's American culture. It's like, he's a, you know, you don't know these things. Orphan Annie, ever read this comic strip? I think it's still around. She has this, what was his name? Uncle
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah, Uncle Daddy Warbucks. Daddy Warbucks. And he shows up every now and again and saves her neck and her dog, what's his name? Sandy. Like that. Holy gosh, you know. This is what happens, you know. Buddhism took off because Ashoka came in and said, hey, you guys run this all wrong, you know. You know, what happens? Somebody comes in, Prabhupada says that. Some kshatriya, some administrator comes in or something like that. So you keep a good program, you keep it pure, you keep your perspective like that. You develop, go on developing your own internal knowledge and perspective. And at some point, if Krishna wants, he'll send a sugar daddy. Somebody, and the world's full of them. The world is full of people who have godzillion times more money than they know what to do with. There's a big advertisement in San Francisco that says, I don't know that there, it's a comment, it's a bumper sticker actually, it says, cocaine is God's way of telling you you're making too much money. And cocaine is God's way of telling you you're making too much money. Because mm-hmm. What do? You just have, you know, you look at these things, the statistics, I forgot what it is, like, you know, 10% of the American population owns like, you know, 40% of the wealth, and like 30% owns 80%. You know, 70% of the population only owns like 20% of all the money. Really, it's kind of like, you know, what's the word, like this. It's one very high pinnacle, kind of spreading out and going way down to the common people who maintain this whole thing. Kind of pondered our president in Peru. He was on a ship with a three-masted sailing boat. I can imagine what it cost to maintain that in the modern world. Had a captain, I think a crew of 12. And it belonged to some rich man. You know, who had so many factories and things like that. So he sent it off around the world, across the Atlantic Ocean, all around the world. And what he would do is whenever it was in some place he liked, like in the Bahamas or something, he would then, you know, call the captain. He would fly there with some friends, and they would then sail for maybe 4 or 5 days or a week or two with a boat, and they would go back to Paris like that. When they got to Tahiti, they would fly there and get off and sail with a boat like that. Oh, hey, my yacht's so-and-so now, you know? Oh, this is how rich people use their money. But there's so many people like that, you know? And so, you know, again, if you just have a good program like that, you know, we're like children trying to wake up our parents when there's a fire in the house. Children smell the fire and they just go, wake up, mommy, daddy, mommy, daddy. And they say, okay, come on, quick, come with me. Yeah? So keep a good program, develop your abilities, and then look for, you know, these people that are coming with different abilities like that. We can engage them. And they can do so much more than we can. Yeah? Yeah? So, you can tuta. I think about it now. Very nice, the girls do a program like that. And then, we go on to another aria. And then I got to work on that. It's kind of hard. I guess I got to include some of my previous agricultural stuff, as well as these. So we have one politician, if he comes, Peter Copeland. He's a rich guy, owns airlines, and ran for president. And he's also an agricultural guy. Actually, his party is called the Green Party. Yeah, agriculture. So if he comes, of course, it would be very good in terms of, you know, so there's a, the verse we're using is light of the Bhagavad, where the capitalists are so happy exploiting the farmers. So it's a very natural verse. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of work to do. You know, there's some time. Then after that, this is the last year. Next year, if you want to do a festival, okay, I'll participate. I'll help you at my leisure. Like that. Yeah. You can see, Baba says, past 50, the sensuous energy in the body is finished. Maybe you can push it to maybe, say, 55. You know? So I'm kind of like, last year was at the limit. It's like 58. You know? Like that. This year I'm kind of like going, I'll just do what I can do. You know, I push what I can push. You know? That's it. You know, you can see right now. Yeah. 20, maybe what's it called? 10 to 30 years old, you should be a doer, right? 30 to 50, you should be a manager, okay? And 50 to 70, you should give strategies, yeah. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Because people need that. We need people who can give strategies. Everything's needed like that. Chani Kapana says, dress according to your age. Exactly. Yeah. So, koi prashna hai. Hay preguntas o comentarios? There he is. Yes,
sir. When you were talking about all the parents that were upset that the children were going to Gulapula,
yeah.
You said that they were going
to. Yeah.
So what I can understand is, I can understand how they might not want their children to go to Gulapula and not go home for a while. But,
I think it's a day school. It's a day school.
Oh. But still, why would they want to actually destroy them?
Well, as part of the division in the politics of the temple goes down, and boy, it's heavy sometimes. At one point, the division, it was a political thing. They had a bliss bar business. They manufacture different sweets and stuff like that, granola, soya, and it's in all the major stores. Like, you go to some store here, like, you find their products there. So it's a good source of income. You know? And but it was this political feud over who was going to run it, how it was being managed. So at one point, at 6 o'clock in the morning, was a raid by one group. They got the keys from some sympathetic employees and went in and grabbed all the computers and all the products of production. But then the other group found out about it, and they went through and real quickly changed all the access codes to all the accounts and hit all the vehicles. So it was a standoff. We have all the production and everything else, and you have the account codes and the vehicles, you know. So finally it was, they had enough information to discover the group that was in control actually had been doing some, what's the word, improper stuff with the accounting and stuff like that. And so they finally recapitulated and gave it all back to them. So what, nobody punched anybody else in the nose, but the politics gets to that level of, like, you think you got politics here, and a little more intense. And one kind of division falls in between those people who think that your thing in life is to make money, be successful, be happy, prestigious and powerful, and do devotional service, and follow the basic sadhana. Other guys think that your problem is to program us to follow the basic sadhana, get up, do your rounds, everything else. And if, along with that, if you're successful, prestigious, economically developed, and everything else like that, that's okay. You know? So it's kind of like that. The people that believe that you should have technical education, you know, or you should have a religious education, kind of falls in both groups.
But they weren't thinking about blowing up.
Blowing up who?
You said they wanted to destroy the temple. They were just like the group who left.
They weren't going to blow it up, no. Just, I mean, as an institution, not as a building. What they want to do is they have eight classrooms. It's kind of simple. It's rustic, you know. But they have about eight classrooms, an assembly hall, everything like that, you know. And it was built before they had a lot of money coming in from the outside. So they want to take all those and convert those into living areas and get the money, the income to use for the, you know, temple programs and stuff like that. So it's a whole, you know, philosophical thing. Behind everything is philosophy. You start there, really. People may not think about it, but they have a philosophy. And when it's not examined, then it's very dangerous, because if it's wrong, you don't even look at it. My article here is about how the whole Nazi culture developed on a previous philosopher, biologist named Haeckel. He presented this whole idea of social Darwinism, that the best culture will destroy the others and predominate and has the right to enslave them and everything else and kill them, even. That was his social Darwinism. And Hitler took that and made it into a political party, created the Nazis, National Socialist German Workers' Party, Nazis. And so then they started the Second World War. If you ever read histories of the Second World War, it was just like, we're astonished at how people were killing people. It's unbelievable. And it was based upon a philosophy. Now the philosophy would not have happened. If been able to defeat that philosophy, it never would have happened. I can just go on. I mean, this, one story. There was one Jewish concentration camp. Jewish people were being taken, captured, and shipped off. And this concentration camp would only hold 4,000 people. So the next train would come with boxcars. They were pushing the boxcars sealed, and then no water or food for 3 days. They arrived, they opened the doors up, and people were dead, like that, starving, everything else. You know. They would force them to get up and walk. Those who couldn't walk, they would take them off right there. Go to the prison camp, they would go through the prisoners in the camp. Those who couldn't work, they were like skeletons, like that. But other things else, they push them to one side, take them off to an area they had mass graves, kill them all, bury them alive like that, somewhat alive like that. So they had 4,000. So it was on and on like that. It's just unbelievable. And it's based on a philosophy. Right? So you think, well, philosophy is not very important. No, it's just... Chanakya Pandit says it's always best to be attentive to details, because things you can catch as a detail in the beginning later on become so big you only with great difficulty can you deal with it. So always catch your enemy, right? In a small stage, in a seedling stage. If you allow them to grow bigger, it's more difficult to contend with them. So. Okay, yes, sir. Talking about classical Indian culture.
How would you summarize?
Srimad Bhagavatam, right? The Vedas, and the essence of Bhagavatam is the essence and the best of all the Vedic literatures. So whatever is classical Indian culture, we're presenting in Srimad Bhagavatam. We're making this point. Other traditions, we're presenting one specific tradition. Like that. We're not trying to hide anything. There are other groups. There's Advaita Vedanta. There's so many groups like that, and people should investigate them. You know? But we're not. We're opposed to this idea of somebody presenting all cultures and actually following none. We're in favor of people who actually follow their culture, and from that perspective, they can appreciate others better like that. So, and after I'm speaking, the idea is that Nitai Gaur Sundar will talk then. Dr. Ravi Prakash Singh, some Indian family, everything else like that. I think he was also president of the Indian psychiatrist of Indian origin in America, like that. So he comes from like this Singh family. He has all the latest magazines on his table when I go there, Times of India, and he's cursing this politician and, you know, glorifying that one. And I mentioned somebody laughs about what they're doing. He knows these things. Like that, it's nature to be involved in that kind of thing. And so, when him then to present something after me, which we'll talk to that point, you know, what is classical Indian culture? Is India itself taking advantage of its culture? Is it doing well there? How, if we're saying Peru should follow classical Indian culture, then well, how is it doing in India? You can criticize it and say, well, classical Indian culture in India is not doing so well. Well, that's not classical Indian culture. Or it is, you know. But that's a very good point, you know. And if you, and it goes on and on. It's actually a big discussion. You know, it takes, you know, a very between Peru and India is very, you know, a lot of economics. You know, India is doing very well in South America now, expanding very well, because the cultures are so similar. And in Peru, you don't have a car. You take some kind of, you know, longer range intermediate transportation from Lima out to Chiclayo, you know, near Chosica. A bus, okay, it takes about 45 minutes an hour. You just pay like, you know, 1 rupee, 5 rupees, you know, something cheap. You get off the bus, crowded, hot, you know, and there's Bajaj three-wheelers waiting. Right? Yeah, they're very good business. They ship them by the sea freight container, you know, of these things, hundreds of these things, because they fit right in. The same petrol system. So as you know, you just look at somebody and some guy's yelling, this part of the colony, that part of the colony, and he gets like four guys jammed in, takes off. They give him like, you know, 20 paisa, you know, 40 paisa, you know, dumps him off, goes back up, gets his next load. You know? So it's very much the ambassador of India, we're talking about this, and he was joking. He said, actually, being Indian is a little easier to live in Peru than it is in India. You know? Because it's just the same, you know, they're used to having servants, used to having cooks, they're used to thieves, they're used to being careful when you're traveling, you know, robbers, dacoity, They're used to colonial culture, both places. They're used to the same foods, you know, same tropical environment. You see the fall, you know, I guess I have that yet, but what's the other one? Brown, very sweet, chiku. Yeah, grows there.
Guava?
I don't know, guava. Yeah, a little different though, you know. The mangoes, everything, coffee, tea, yeah. And the medical system is Ayurvedic medicine, medical system. But, you know, coming from different, so take your pulse like that, curanderos. Yeah. Somebody like that is, you know, hopefully he'll talk to this point. You want us to follow classical Indian culture, but India is not, well, how is it, you know, we're supposed to take this up, but the experiment's already going on in India. You know, India's already following classical culture. How's it doing? And you can talk about that. Well, not all of it's following it. You know, some of it's trying to imitate the West. You know, some of it's following British ideas. You know? So it's a nice topic. You know? And our only point here is just to give people enough, you know, what's the word, like faith in what we're talking about, to try out the seminar. You know, to invest 30 weeks, basically, 2 hours a week, to invest 60 hours for a serious investigation of this. This is culture and stuff like that. And I think they're ready for it. In Concitec, they were discussing kind of like, well, maybe we should pay two of our many researchers to take the course. You know, they're going to, okay, we'll pay them for 60 hours worth of work over 30 weeks, you know, instead of investigating new techniques of cloning and, you know, biological so-and-so from a German pharmaceutical company will investigate something else, you know, will investigate this. And again, doing this again and again is just some, you know, Bhagavatam is very substantial. You know, we haven't got anything. No, you should read it again and read it again. It's just like, wow, you know, there's real culture here. And there's real content like that. Yeah. So, here's, yeah.
You were mentioning how we need to change the technology that we do.
Yeah.
So would that mean that slowly our focus should be to remove the computers and come back to simple life? How does
it work? Yeah. That's going to be, I would say, dictated by people who actually work in those fields and know the area like that. For example, our medicine, in the Ayurveda is describing that medicine with sound is daivic, divine, celestial. Medicine with herbs and pills is human. And medicine with knives and needles is demoniac, like that. But we're accepting that in the material world, to the very end, you're always going to have some demoniac element, And therefore, sometimes even the best man probably may need, to go to the demons to get something done, You have an automobile accident, so then Western medicine is the best in the world for traumatic things. We create these things, An ox cart collision, you may fall off and scratch your nose or something like that. This is not as much, these heavy things. But, you're driving two automobiles at 60 miles an hour on a county highway this far apart, right? What's the big surprise? Every now and again, somebody tries to come on the thing, and you've got to hit another car head on, and your guts are scattered all over the highway or something, Or else you get a really bad, your arm cut off. And we can put it back on. You can. Miraculous. In microsurgery, you can put the whole thing back on so it works. It is marvelous. But it's just, that's the point. The people working these technologies and stuff gradually appreciating there's a different way to do this. And there are fundamental principles behind the whole thing. Is nature our enemy or is nature our friend? Is somebody controlling nature? And then does nature have a husband? Mother Nature have a husband or not? And once you take these fundamental perspectives, it changes how you deal with nature, how your science and technology develop. So specifically, we can give suggestions, but specifically the idea is that people that work in these areas have to start reading these things and start making the choices, that within 40 years can bring us to a very, very nice, happy, prosperous thing like that. We have the knowledge. We have the technology in our classical cultures like that.
This question is really like day before yesterday you were talking you said that you've been you took since from 1974, 32 years have passed, you've gone through various stages,
Myself?
In devotional life you passed through various stages. So when you pass through from stage one to stage two, obviously the person has a attachment, so does he feels stage two is better than him, so is it person feels bad that am I going to stage two might be better than stage one or might be worse?
For example, when I was becoming a devotee, I gave up all these heavy intoxicants which are common in the university system like that. But then I was still attached, substitute I was eating chocolates and C's candy, one of the best. The best chocolates like that, big boxes, all these kinds of sweets like that. So I was that was how, I was giving my attachment for heavy intoxication, but I was then becoming, The nectar instruction came out and Prabhupada says, one should not eat in sweetmeat shops to satisfy the tongue. So when I read that, I tried to read over it or read behind it, or maybe we can break sweetmeat shops into something else, or sweetmeat sweat. My mind was just trying to avoid that, But then you say, I'm advancing. I can see, And so then I would stand outside the sweetmeat shop and looking inside like that, So yeah, it was suffering to get free from the attachment, and the idea is we don't want to go too fast. Because yes, it'll cause damage, it's like that. So we have to have enthusiasm to give up these attachments, but utsahanish chayad daryat, but patience. It'll take time like that. And we can see they're very satisfied. I'm making good progress. Like that. But yes, you have to do both. You have to increase your appreciation for the higher taste by doing it, tasting it, and you have to give up your attachment for the lower taste. You can't row the boat while the anchor's down and make much progress, right? So you got to pull the anchors up, as well as row. Anybody here? Mapasalam ki.
Yeah.
And after this, we'll have a nice buffet. Hmm? I guess they plan all these things. Have nice, you know, buffet banquet down there. So that down there is one thing, is that they don't mind going till like midnight. You know? Like, any of that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, that's the latest, you know, but that's so having, you know, a buffet banquet at 9 o'clock at night or something like that. Then it's like, it's okay in talking, and it's done by 11 o'clock or something. Like India, same way. The day starts about 10 o'clock in the work day. So again, same thing as India. Because it's always a siesta. It's hot, it's too hot in the daytime to do anything sometimes. Okay, so Papa Ki.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Mahamantra Ki.
Thank you all very much.
Take some time to write this. I'll do it just because we can remember, I think. I guess use my little recorder and stuff. And kind of tedious, I guess, you know, when we listen to all these things, it's easier just to go through. Once you give it, though, right away, the next day you try and write it. You can remember like that. I'll just get my books and
write. But there you won't actually read. You won't actually read there.
Well, what I'll do, probably, I'll have one.